Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, so we're going to try to burn through some of these questions. We've got some other people waiting out here to use the studio. We got a roll, my man. So,
yeah,
welcome.
Today's been a hectic day.
Yes, yeah, so let's get started. From Eddie, he says, I have a one terabyte internal hard drive divided into two logical partitions. C, 600 gig, and T, 200 gig. Both are in Windows 7 Pro, 64-bit. I create a system image, drive C, blah, 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 blah. So he's backed this up, and he wants to restore, and he's asking, does it need to restore to that C drive, or can he restore to a different drive letter?
So the drive letter, depending on how you do the system restore, is going to stick with the image.
Yeah.
What you want to make sure that you're doing is you're either restoring it to a clean drive, so then you're going to get whatever drive letter that is embedded with the image, or you can pre-configure an existing partition, again, depending on how the image is laid out, to if you use disk part, so if you boot from the DVD and you use disk part, you can say assign letter equals C, you know, to a particular partition, and then you can restore to that, and you can ensure that you stick with the same part, same drive letter. But yes, you don't want to mix up drive letters.
Okay. He has a follow-up to this, and if he buys an SSD drive and plugs it into the PC, can he just restore that image onto this new SSD, or will there be some caveats, like drive letters in his first question?
So ignoring the caveats for the first question, when you install Windows on an SSD, Windows will actually do some different configuration options, different drivers depending on the type of drive, defrag options, trim options, all like a bunch of different variations. So what I would suggest doing rather than restoring an image on an SSD is just plugging it in, doing a clean install, mounting the image. If you've taken it as a WIM file, you can mount the image that you've taken and then just move data back and forth from that image that you've snapped.
Okay, and he has a follow-up to that question. If he buys a new laptop, can he restore the image from his PC desktop to his laptop so he doesn't have to reinstall everything? And what would it mean to licenses, both Windows itself and for the other software?
No. Technically speaking, you know, I'm going to get a response on this.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, you could do it, but
here comes Magic Andre.
Well, the thing is there's going to be much hassle with it.
Yeah.
If the desktop was an OEM and you're restoring to a different OEM, activation is going to kick in.
Yeah.
Really, you just don't want to do that.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea. Just start fresh.
Just start fresh.
Yeah.
If you're taking an OEM machine and you use a retail key, you can do that, but it'll now just be a retail image.
Okay, next question. I prefer the audio output on my computer to use standard audio jack output due to volume issues, but I'm using a monitor with HDMI, and I've chosen to set the default audio device to be speakers, but every time I reboot, the default audio device goes back to HDMI output again. I'm running Windows 7 64-bit. Why does it not remember the default device? I do shut down and boot up properly without errors. Yeah, that's difficult to figure out over an email.
Right.
We don't know
what drivers are
installed. But I can give you a quick fix to this. They sent some screenshots, and they're using an ATI card, AMD drivers. When you go to install these AMD drivers, there's an option. Go through the long install. Uncheck the box to use HDMI audio drivers, and those drivers won't even be there for you to use, so you won't have to worry about that. I have an issue at home. You know, I was talking about my old Western Digital TVs that have HDMI, and the audio on it, for whatever reason, it locks up the computer if I have audio going out to it, or at least with one of the cards that I had. So just don't install the HDMI drivers, and you won't have that issue. You can also go into the ATI Catalyst software.
Control panel,
And turn that off. You can turn off where it uses HDMI, but if it's flipping back, that might still do that. If you don't uninstall those drivers to begin with, you won't.
I have another solution, and I do this on my system at home that I've got.
Lay it on me.
I have a very similar problem. I want the audio to come out from optical, actually, into a sound system. My system, bare bones, HTPC kind of thing, I actually have it outputting with a DVI cable, DVI converting to HDMI.
Yeah.
So, obviously, no audio over DVI. And it just handles it beautifully in that case. I don't have to do anything because the system knows, hey, I'm outputting over DVI. There is no audio there.
Yeah.
It's going to automatically switch to speakers. So I get the best of both. I get HDMI over the DVI, everything works perfectly, and I get the right audio.
I was sorting cables with my four-year-old, and I was explaining to him the optical cable and how it works differently from every other cable we are going through. Mm-hmm. And after a very long explanation about it, he's like, that's the stupidest idea ever for a cable. So there you have it. Four-year-olds don't like optical. All right, next question. I usually log in with multiple accounts simultaneously. Say I have a personal account, my work account, and I leave my personal user logged in while I'm working. However, I'd like to have my browser window started for my personal account available in my work account. I've heard this is possible in Linux somehow, but I couldn't find a way for Windows.
When I first read that question, I'm trying to figure out in my mind, how exactly is it useful to have a browser window coming from another account?
Yeah.
You know, it's really about the credentials that are used in that browser that actually matter.
Yeah.
So you can be in your work account and be still in a browser that's still, you know, for your regular personal user.
Yeah.
It's still coming from the same machine. So if you're worried about some kind of auditing that is happening.
Yeah, if they're watching, if they're sniffing the traffic.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what account that you're in. Yeah. It makes no difference. In any case, for Windows, really the only option is for fast user switching. You know, you're not going to get a different browser window that is from another user account that is actually secure to show up in the work account
session. I was thinking about it, and I don't know what the use case on this is, but I can imagine, let's say there's some reason you really want to keep them separated, I'd just fire up Windows XP mode or do some kind of virtualized thing and just run
actually,
out of the
window. Yeah, actually, in an enterprise environment, what you could use is remote apps.
Yeah.
You know, that's the Rail TS, applications. Mm-hmm. So you can connect to a terminal server that will actually remote out a different Internet Explorer window.
Yeah.
And it'll look just like an application on your desktop, but it's actually running on another machine.
Okay. All right. Next question. I frequently clear out the cookies, and whenever I do this, I go to my credit card for Chase. You require that I get an email or a text or a phone call with a special code. Quite a pain. Is there a way to set that the cookies for just Chase website do not get erased when I delete all browsing cookie history?
I always kind of have to question about why anybody would be deleting that constantly. But for a banking site that, if you're running Windows 7 or higher, I'd actually recommend using pinned sites.
Yeah.
That'll actually keep things very separate. Trying to get this pinned to the taskbar is a lot harder with a trackpad.
Yeah.
But you know, you just drag it down to the taskbar and make it a pinned site. And then that one, you can be sure whenever you're firing it off, is just for your bank.
Yeah.
It'll maintain your cookies, and it'll actually be a secure browsing session.
Yeah, and the Chrome is kind of themed to the site.
Chrome is kind of themed, and add-ins are disabled. You know, the pinned site was really designed around the whole banking scenario. You know, you're wanting to be certain what you're going to.
Yeah. Okay, next question. Windows 7 Professional, I want to give a normal user some administrator rights like install, uninstall programs, enable, disable network adapters, also while making it possible to enforce parental controls on that user. Is it possible? Well, if you have rights to install and uninstall software, you're going to have rights
to disable the parental controls.
Yeah.
I mean, once you can't really have admin-ish style rights without actually having admin rights.
Yeah.
So, no, there's no in-between. You know, people will, again, probably respond, well, we had power users before. Power users was a flawed concept. It is trivial to go from power users to administrators. It is not a group that should ever be used for anything. In Windows 7, you can be a standard user and, you know, renew and release IP addresses without being an admin. So really, you want to question why you want to enforce parental controls but still allow them to install and uninstall software. There's really no good happy medium there.
Okay. All right, next question. I'm running Windows 7 Pro with an Intel 520 SSD. I set the default action to hibernate when I press a power button, so when the computer wakes up, it asks for a password. However, if the OS goes in sleep mode, the password is not required when the computer wakes up again. The problem is that the computer goes idle for a few minutes, it goes into sleep instead of hibernate, and I looked around, couldn't find a way to change its behavior. Seems hibernate option isn't part of the option. After X minutes, how do I make the computer hibernate instead of sleep?
Okay. if we're just answering the last particular question, how do I make the system hibernate instead of sleep, you can change the sleep state to never.
Yeah.
And then you can set what the power button does to hibernate.
Yeah.
You can force hibernate for all of this.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, what the person is actually asking for. There seems to be a little bit of contradiction there. You can disable sleep if you wanted to in the BIOS. You can disable sleep via group policy.
Yeah.
You can enforce hibernate. You can create a shortcut on your desktop to hibernate, but I would just go with the power button.
Yeah, and for changing what the power button does, I always hit start, type power button, mm-hmm. and click the first thing that comes up, and that'll take you right there. So it's a very simple way to get in there. All right, next question. I recently bought a new HP laptop with Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit, and HP is not good when it comes to pre-installed bloatware, so I'd like to wipe everything clean and install a fresh copy of Windows 7 Premium 64-bit. The problem is that the laptop did not ship with Windows installation DVD. Where can I get Windows legally? I already have the key and the genuine sticker on my laptop. I just need to get the media. So, yeah, you have to get it from your OEM. And usually they charge a few dollars, you know. I think the last time I did it was $15.
Was it $15?
Yeah. Okay. You remember at one point I did it and they charged a lot more. It was like $50, which I thought was a little outrageous to get, you know, restore disks.
Right.
But it depends on the manufacturer. But just contact the 800 number for the OEM for your machine and, you know, give them your machine number and they'll send you what you need. And there will be probably some slight charge. I'll just
start uninstalling stuff, frankly. Yeah. I mean, trying to do a clean install for many OEM machines, not everything actually has an installer on their website. Some things get pre-injected in the manufacturing floor.
Yeah.
So particular drivers, for whatever reason, depending on the machine, depending on the age of the machine, you might not have the exact driver that you need from the website.
Yeah, and one of the other things you want to check too, and they'll tell you this when you call the OEM, is you could have some kind of partition on the drive, mm-hmm. on the laptop that you could boot off of. So you might even have it and you just don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you call them, they'll tell you, hey, you know, just hold down this when you boot up and it'll boot from that partition. You actually have Windows. So best to call the OEM, tell them what model you have and take it from there.
Yep.
All right, next question. I got a wireless keyboard for my computer, but I have no idea to see if I have Bluetooth or not. How can I tell if I have Bluetooth?
If you have a machine that has Bluetooth, I would check it just by going to Device Manager. And it shows up right here under Bluetooth radios.
Cool. Okay. So if you have that, that's a good indicator. You've got a working driver, so there must be working hardware.
Yep.
And
if you want to add a Bluetooth device, I mean, I've got this little icon in here.
Yeah.
You know, add a device, which will go to the Windows. I'm probably picking up yours right now, and we could. Is that you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically how you add a device right there.
Yeah, and the other thing to check for, too, is far too often, you know, if I've got a laptop that's got some kind of button or a switch on
you
it
turn
or
it
something,
off.
You turn it off and you don't know that you might need to check that to make sure you still have it turned on.
Yep.
So depends on what kind of machine you've got. All right, last question here. I've just added an SSD drive to my PC to boost performance, and now I'm deciding for each application whether to install on the platter drive or on the SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Would you install Microsoft Visual Studio 2010 and Expression Studio on the SSD to speed it up, or would it be wasted space? This is a good question because you know, I went through the same thing. I just put an SSD in my machine at home,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of a balance because you know, SSDs are smaller, of course, and you don't want to fill them up. So which software do you install on the SSD and which do you install on the platter drive? And
I would go with the software that you use most heavily.
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously going to be the one where you get the best bang for the buck.
Yeah.
VS on an SSD? Sure. I mean, you're talking about, what, less than 2 gig on that? Yeah, I mean, that's not unreasonable to install on an SSD if you're using it all the time.
Yeah, I agree with that. And one of the things that I did is, you know, I end up making the decision to run the Adobe suite mm-hmm. off of my SSD. And I think it makes a difference. I mean, everything
absolutely.
Seems very fast. And
you know what would make a bigger difference on your Adobe suite, though?
What's that? Putting the cache for the...
Even more. Disabling useless plugins.
Yeah.
Man, I have found a massive, massive speed boost just by going through and say, I will never use that plugin. I will never use that plugin.
Yeah.
And you just disable... I could easily disable 90% of them.
Yeah.
And that is a massively huge boost to the... Photoshop or Acrobat, Designer, load times.
Yeah, and some of the applications like Photoshop will have a scratch file that mm-hmm. you know it uses, and so I'll set that to the SSD as well. So yeah, that'll help speed things up. But if you use Visual Studio all the time, I'd probably go with the SSD if you can afford the space.
Mm-hmm.
So things like VLC or you know all those other things.
No.
I just installed, and the way that I did it is you know I've got the C drive that's the SSD, the D drive that's the platter. Whenever I go to do the install, you just change the C to the D and
yep.
just let it keep on going and put that there. But you know it's kind of a balance, so it depends on the software. But I think Visual Studio. The master collection for Adobe that I use, you know, definitely put those on the SSD.
Yeah, that makes absolute perfect sense. And, you know, just to plug Windows 8 a little bit, there are improvements with SSD performances in Windows 8, you know, people should take a look at.
Yeah.
If you're going for purchasing an SSD, I wouldn't go for anything less than a 64 gig right now, though.
Yeah.
Like that's basically the bare minimum that you should go
Absolutely.
With.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So first one's from Extreme Tech. And this is one that we aren't going to do a deep dive on today. But you want to read this. So if you are one of the people who just you can't afford an SSD, they are a little bit pricey, especially if you don't want to go for a 64-bit.
It's about a
you
buck a gig bigger. Right now.
Yeah. So... there's hybrid drives that will use a platter drive with some SSD smarts put in as mm-hmm. kind of like a cache or, you know. So it's supposed to be the best of both worlds. You want to read all the way through this if this is something that you're thinking about doing. I read this and because I was kind of on the fence about this. At one point, I was like, I was looking at this kind of drive for my system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think if it were me, I would just wait for SSD prices to come down if that's your stopping point, that you know, just the high cost of it.
Mm-hmm.
With these, there's some caveats, like they often include software that you have to install to get them to work properly.
They're not hardware hybrid drives.
Yeah.
Like if you took the drive and you wiped it, or you, let's say, installed it into any other machine and you just mounted it as a physical drive,
yeah,
it would actually show up as two different drives. It would show up as a 32 gig SSD plus whatever amount the platter drive is. They're not,
yeah.
until you actually install the driver on your system
mm-hmm.
to merge the view,
yeah,
it's not actually a hybrid drive.
Yeah, and there's some other caveats too. I mean, like they do a pretty good job of taking what is on the SSD and backing it up quickly so that there's no loss of data. But how quickly, you know, if the power just drops off all of a sudden, are you going to lose anything?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The balance there, it's definitely something, it's a technology that you want to read all about before you get into it. But the nice thing about this article is 5 pages and they do a bunch of benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see exactly what the difference is going to be between using this type of drive and using just a platter drive. And it
What's
might
the cost difference looking like?
Cost is really favorable to this because
okay.
you get a large size drive
mm-hmm.
and you get the performance of having some SSD technology in there,
mm-hmm.
but you know it's not entirely as good as just an SSD drive, of course,
mm-hmm.
But it's not as expensive. So.
So are they using the SSD, like really it's just more of a cache than anything
yeah.
else, right?
Yeah.
So. You're still going to be losing out if you're working with, say, more than the size of the SSD frequently. If you're
yeah.
shuttling around more than 32 gig or however large the size of the hybrid portion is.
Yeah, and you run your system a few times and your apps, and it gets to see which parts it needs to be written, and it gets written into that SSD. And
mm-hmm.
Great article. It talks about some of the different, you know, things like Ready Boost and things that are already in Windows that help with these things and where these... have some strengths and where they might not be as good. But it's worth checking out to see, you know, well, you know, that might be something that you want to do. I don't know.
It's certainly a technology to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's people that are trying to figure out, well, how can we reuse existing technology? How do we lengthen the life of platter drives, you know, keep those around?
Yeah.
Without having too much of an impact on the wallet or on power consumption.
Yeah, exactly. And the nice thing about this, you can go through the benchmarks and just see, you know, is that something you want to get into? But I'd read the entire article if this is a drive that you're thinking about. Seems like too many caveats for me. Just too much there. So I'd stick with SSD. All right, the other pick of the week this week is Channel 9 at JPL. And this is from back in 2008. Charles, Waleed, Nick Fillingham, and some other folks went over to JPL with Mark Mercury to talk about, you know, the Curiosity program, talking about RoboChamps. I mean, NASA and Microsoft have a great relationship, especially when it comes to robotics. I know we're always talking to them about, you know, how to improve the robotics developer kit and the other things that we work on here. And so they went and they shot some video, and you get to see some behind the scenes at JPL if you're interested in the Mars mission from this week. But yeah, it's a very interesting thing here. They also signed a book that got scanned, so their signatures are up on that Curiosity rover.
It's pretty amazing with the Curiosity rover. I mean, I'm assuming you saw the first video, right?
Yeah.
Probably everybody did. Just how frickin' amazing is that?
Yeah, you dropping know. A car, especially the way they did it, was pretty impressive.
And to, like, how quickly we were able to see images, the general public seeing images of Mars.
Yeah, and I really like the idea of dropping the car off with a jetpack, and I wish that I could do that now, because it would make parking a lot easier, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, it's awesome. And when I saw the first pictures come out, though, I was like, come on, what, you sent my old Sidekick 2 camera up there? What's up with that? But there's 12 cameras on this thing. They're going to have a lot better footage coming out. It's going to be video, you know, nice still pictures and everything. So looking forward to that. All right.
Cool.
So that's the show for this week. And if you want to write us, you can send mail to defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a message in the comments. Of course, if you have a tech support problem, we like the problem step recorder and logs and files and an email so that we can go back and forth in the middle of the night. That's you, not me, of course. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.